This is Molly Hemingway of The Federalist. Join me, my husband Mark of Real Clear Investigations, 12-time All-American swimmer Riley Gaines, Aaron Wren of The American Conservative, and others for the 2024 Making the Case Conference, Friday, July 12th and Saturday, July 13th at Concordia University, Chicago. Learn more at issuesetc.org. Making the Case, July 12th and 13th in Chicago. issuesetc.org.
If you do not specifically and intentionally resist the sexual revolution, you're going to be swept away by it.
Planned Parenthood's claim that abortion is only 3% of what they do is very misleading. So it's like McDonald's claiming hamburgers are 3% of what we do. Because if you go to McDonald's, you get a wrapper and a lid and a straw. I mean, you're there to get a hamburger. Even though they may provide other things as well, suddenly Planned Parenthood's main business is performing abortions.
Here's the hard truth. If he wants to live with you without marrying you, he doesn't love you enough to marry you. So don't marry that man.
This is what the means of grace are. They're these little springs in this age where the joys of the age to come bubbles up from the heart of God for the people of God to learn to live by and to draw their refreshment from.
When driving to and from work through the Las Vegas Valley and Den of Iniquity, I always hit the jackpot by listening to Issues, Etc.
Well, it's a huge story in the Associated Press, and it's all about traditional younger Catholics. It appears that the age of Vatican II, the heyday of change, what do they call it? A little sunshine, some fresh breeze blowing through Roman Catholic churches, has come to an end. What will the future of Roman Catholicism in America look like? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Wednesday afternoon, May the 8th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Terry Mattingly will join us to talk about media coverage of younger traditional Catholics. We'll spend some time with Pastor Tom Baker of Law and Gospel, teaching a Sunday school lesson, Jesus sending out the 72 in Luke chapter 10. And Dr. John Ferguson will be alongside. We'll discuss what we should value and why. Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow on Communications and Culture at St. Constantine College in Houston, Texas. He writes Rational Sheep, a Substack newsletter for faith and mass media. He's author of the National On Religion column for the Andrews McMeel Universal Syndicate. And for two decades, he led the GetReligion.org website. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
Why do you think the Associated Press spent so much ink on a story about traditional younger Catholics?
Well, first of all, it's two stories. And I think it's very important to pause and ask where this story came from. And I think the zip code for the opening anecdote and the dateline is crucial. But I think they wrote this story not because they're all that interested in traditional Catholics. They're interested in the trend. But I believe, if you know anything about Catholicism in Wisconsin, you know that there's a lot of progressive Catholic life up in the northern Midwest. I predict this story began with a source in Wisconsin, and the opening anecdote that frames the entire piece is not really about traditional Catholic life. It's about the pain that traditional Catholic life is causing to liberal and progressive Catholics. The story is set in a parish where we are told that people are leaving and the old big services are now shrinking. And this parish just isn't, yes, there are lively new families that have shown up, but overall it's a picture of pain in that congregation. These changes are causing pain. And let me stress, that's a valid part of the equation of this story. But do you think the readers would have come away with this if the story had opened and closed, let's say, in Nashville at a booming Catholic parish that is connected to the Nashville Dominicans, which is an order of religious women that is exploding in numbers. They have so many postulants that they can hardly know what to do with them. So they're opening new branches in different areas and sending some of these young women out to serve the poor and work in education in other parts of the country. But if you had opened and closed with a booming trad parish, that would be equally as valid a way to frame the story. In fact, if it's about traditional Catholics, that might be kind of the logical way to do it. But I'm convinced that isn't where this story began. The story begins with the complaints and the pain endured on the Catholic left. And we see that in the entire structure of this story. So they put lots of ink into this, and it's a way better story than normal in a lot of mainstream media at this point about a complex subject. And the story hauls off at one point and just says, this is a really complex story. These traditional Catholics are more complex than some people think they are. And that's good. At the same time, it hints at them being racist, Trump followers, etc. It's got the usual blues chords in there, in this melody, in terms of how the press views these folks. But we can walk through some of the language in the story. But I really think this started with hurting people on the Catholic left, and somebody contacted the Associated Press, and you've really got to come see what's happening to this wonderful parish that's being destroyed by these right-wingers. It's fascinating. They keep saying over and over that this is about, they hint, attacks on Catholic life after Vatican II, which is not the same thing as attacks on Vatican II. In fact, I just ran through the story again. I don't think the traditionalists here are requesting a single thing that isn't in Vatican II. And I think it helps to remember that the heroes of the trads in this piece, one time explicitly and the other by implication, are John Paul II and Cardinal Ratzinger, who becomes Pope Benedict XVI. And those two men took part in Vatican II. Both of them played major roles in the theology of Vatican II and in many of the documents. So I would question this story's overarching theme, which is traditionalists versus Vatican II. If anything here, it's traditionalists versus what some have called the spirit of Vatican II, which was that people who say the Vatican II didn't go far enough, we've got to have like something like a synod on synodality to see if there's more changes we need to make to Vatican II, what some people are calling Vatican II light, or like the rough draft of Vatican III. That's not the same thing as saying that traditionalists have problems with the documents and the teachings of Vatican II, let alone the catechism.
Does it set that Vatican II context well enough, the AP story? Does it tell us what really actually changed after Vatican II, that it has, as it's kind of being taken away from them, has these Madison Catholics so upset?
Well, once again, a lot of traditionalists are not mad at Vatican II. They're mad at a lot of things that certain cardinals and not others, and the U.S. cardinals are very divided, and the story mentions that. I think it even calls like the increasingly conservative, it might even use right wing, forces that control the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. That's another thing coming straight out of the playbook of the allies of Pope Francis. No, we aren't really told, for example, that Vatican II has lots of language in it about allowing traditional music and traditional chant and Latin, etc. Vatican II doesn't for sure say, oh, there's really no need to go to confession anymore. In fact, what I think we should do, let's walk through some of the language from the AP story and listen to how some of these things get kind of mixed up. So here's it's describing life at this parish. So much was changing. Sermons were focusing more on sin and confession. Priests were rarely seen without cassocks. Altar girls, for a time, were banned. At the parish elementary school, students began hearing about abortion and hell. It was like a step back in time, said one former parishioner, still so dazzled by the tumultuous changes that began in 2021 with a new pastor that he only spoke on condition of anonymity. Like, he's afraid to talk. And once again, former parishioner. Any chance that former parishioner is one of the first people AP talked to or was sent to for background about what's happening in this church? What's missing from that whole section is the catechism, the actual teachings of the Roman Catholic Church. Sermons were focusing more on sin and confession. Okay, catechism. Priests were rarely seen without cassocks. Okay, a matter of cultural style to some degree, but it would be interesting to see that in the context of the global Catholic Church, not just in terms of America. Altar girls for a time were banned. Notice that they came back at this parish, so that was kind of a scary thing, but they got away with it. At the parish elementary school, students began hearing about abortion and hell. Okay, catechism. Now, a really crucial section of the story comes later. So this is, in fact, this is the thesis statement of the article. Across the U.S., the Catholic Church is undergoing an immense shift. Generations of Catholics who embraced the modernizing tide sparked in the 1960s by Vatican II are increasingly giving way to religious conservatives who believe the church has been twisted by change, with the promise of eternal salvation replaced by guitar masses, parish food pantries, and casual indifference to church doctrine. Now, there's all kinds of things all put in together there. But once again, the language embraced the modernizing tide sparked by Vatican II is not the same thing as saying they rejected Vatican II. This whole idea that Vatican II was like an earthquake and a tsunami came out of it, and that tsunami, that modernizing tide, is going to bring a whole lot of stuff that isn't in Vatican II, like banning the traditional Latin Mass. And then it said, yes, there are religious conservatives who believe the church has been twisted by change. And there are extreme traditionalists who blame that on Vatican II. But this story doesn't make any attempt at all to differentiate between people who are critical of Vatican II and people like John Paul II and Pope Benedict who question some of the changes people made inspired by Vatican II and want to actually go back to the language of the document. And eternal salvation versus food pantries, once again, helping the poor is an incredible emphasis in the catechism and in the teachings of the Catholic Church. And folks, that isn't a left versus right issue. If you've got lots of anecdotes about traditional Catholic churches that close their food pantries and stop raising money so the poor can go to their Catholic schools or something like that, bring it on. That would be a really spectacular story. But I predict you won't find that because shrinking churches frequently have less money to invest in those kinds of ministries and schools than growing churches. So one of the essential questions that journalists need to ask after reading this AP story, which is better than average, is what Catholic churches are growing and which Catholic churches are shrinking and are in decline. Because this story leaves readers, especially with a lengthy final anecdote about how, yes, they've got one growing services, but lots of other people have left and other services now have empty pews and everything. Well, we don't know anything statistically about that parish 20 years ago or 15 years ago or 10. We don't know what the trends were. We don't know how healthy it is. None of that fits the template. There were growing, modernized, happy, Catholic, progressive churches that didn't talk that much about hell and confession, and there was a casual indifference to church doctrine. Are those the churches that were growing? Or is most of the growth of the church, and I'm going to define growth with a broader list of questions that I think will be familiar to our listeners. Are the growing churches coming out of various approaches to conservative or traditional Catholic life? And listeners may be thinking of a quote I've used several times from an Anglican bishop who confronted bishops from the declining churches of Europe and North America. He was talking to the bishops from liberalizing churches, and he finally said, "Where are your converts? Where are your children? And where are your priests?" And I've said that in stories of this kind, you can't write about a Catholic parish, such as the one that frames this entire article, without telling us what are the trends at that parish in marriages, marriage ceremonies, baptisms of adult converts and of children. How long has it been since that parish produced a priest? Does that parish have a growing, thriving Catholic school that's bringing new people into the church? What are the actual practical questions that need to be asked? But if this story is about the traditionalists are growing, and that's causing lots of pain, and the implication is it's causing lots of people to flee the church. There's a critical statistic that I always remind people of. This is from a Pew Research Center research article from just a, it's about 9 years ago, but I doubt these trends have changed. Nearly one third of American adults, 31.7%, say they were raised Catholic. Among that group, fully 41% no longer identify with Catholicism. This means that 12.9% of American adults are former Catholics, while just 2% of U.S. adults have converted to Catholicism from another religious tradition. No other religious group in our survey has such a lopsided ratio of losses to gain. So, the question for journalists is, if that's something that's been going on for the last couple of decades, what churches are losing members? And which churches are gaining members, either through conversions, rising birth rates, etc.? I don't think we ever get any hard information in this story about that.
Terry Mattingly is our guest, senior fellow on communications and culture at St. Constantine College in Houston, Texas. We're talking about media coverage of younger traditional Catholics. We'll take up the age of these trad Catholics next. You can meet and hear 12-time All-American swimmer Riley Gaines, journalists Mark and Molly Hemingway, Aaron Wren of the American Conservative, Chris Roseborough of Fighting for the Faith, and Pastor Brian Wolfmiller of Has American Christianity Failed at the 2024 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. The premier conference for Christian laity is Friday, July 12th and Saturday, July 13th at Concordia University, Chicago. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org.
This fallen creation is bested by tornado, hurricane, flood, pandemic, and more. LCMS Disaster Response helps our congregations, their pastors, and other church workers to reach out to their members and neighbors with mercy, which flows from Christ's altar. We offer quality volunteer training, help for congregational readiness and response, and disaster grant funding. To learn more, visit lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Memoria Press's award-winning Latin programs have successfully taught hundreds of thousands of students across the world. Their easy-to-use, step-by-step Latin curriculum provides students with an academic vocabulary, a mastery of English grammar, and strong critical thinking skills. If you're interested in learning more, visit them at memoriapress.com and use the coupon code LPR24 at checkout. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
What is prayer? Why do Christians pray? How do we pray? What's a collect? We talk about that in church. What's a collect? How do I pray a collect? For this question and many others like it, pick up your copy of the May issue of the Lutheran Witness in Jesus' name, where we talk about prayer and all its many and different aspects. Buy your copy at cph.org/witness or visit our website, witness.lcms.org, to learn more. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
We're talking about media coverage of younger traditional Catholics. Terry Mattingly is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues, Etc. Terry writes Rational Sheep, a Substack newsletter for faith and mass media. He's author of the National On Religion column for the Andrews McMeel Universal Syndicate, and for two decades he led the GetReligion.org website. So, Terry, we recently interviewed demographer Lyman Stone about a recent study he did on Lutheran religious life in my denomination, the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod. He discovered that younger people vastly prefer to attend more traditional, we would call it confessional, Lutheran congregations with a traditional liturgy, and that those congregations, although many of them are smaller congregations, tend to make and keep converts better than larger non-traditional Lutheran churches. So I mention that because the question is, could this be more than just a Roman Catholic thing? Could this be a broad generational thing?
It could be, but I think it's important to say that the overarching trends in American life are still toward nuns, and that's not N-U-N-S, N-O-N-E-S, nuns, nothing in particulars, and above all to non-denominationalism, which would be kind of your low church Lutheranism or guitar mass Catholicism on steroids in terms of worship styles, use of mass media traditions, light shows, fog, et cetera, et cetera. But we're living in an increasingly complex country in terms of religion. And I don't think there's any question that certain types of churches within the ancient and liturgical world, certain types of churches are in decline and others are growing within that niche. And I'm asked the question all the time, is Eastern Orthodox Christianity in America growing? And Andrew Stephen Damick, a priest in the Antiochian Archdiocese, has done a brilliant video analyzing these trends. And the answer is yes, but there are Orthodox churches in America that are declining rapidly. There are churches in Orthodoxy in America that are growing rapidly. When you put it all together, it can look like a slight decline or even that these churches are plateaued. But you have to look at what's happening in the missions that are forming in the last couple of decades, in the decades since the evangelical movement into Orthodoxy began. A very veteran priest, my own priest for many years in Baltimore, and he now lives in East Tennessee, by the way, Father Gregory Matthews Green, the husband of the well-known writer Frederica Matthews Green. Father Gregory said he doesn't know of a convert-friendly church in the Sun Belt that isn't in the middle of a building plan right now, frantically trying to build a church like we are here in the Oak Ridge area, where we we've had to knock every wall out of our parish just so that everybody has more room to stand for worship. The whole building is now basically the sanctuary. We had to give up all our classrooms, or almost all of our classrooms, etc. So, is our traditional forms of worship growing in historic churches? I think the answer is definitely yes. The question is whether that puts a dent in some of the statistics that did make it into the AP article. And let me back up what I just said about the ex-Catholic statistics from Pew Research with this paragraph, which did make it into the AP story. In 1970, more than half of America's Catholics said they went to Mass at least once a week. By 2022, that had fallen to 17%. Okay, that's the post-Vatican II era. Among millennials, the number is just 9%. Even as the U.S. Catholic population has jumped to more than 70 million, driven in part by immigration from Latin America, ever fewer Catholics are involved in the Church's most important rites. Infant baptisms have fallen from 1.2 million in 1965 to 440,000 in 2021. There's the Vatican II framework again. Catholic marriages have dropped by well over two-thirds. So here's that balancing of the two statistics. AP puts it this way: the shrinking numbers mean that those who remain in the church have outsized influence compared with the overall Catholic population. In other words, power belongs to people who are showing up, or, in the words of that Anglican bishop — I've had many Catholics, by the way, email me about this quote and say it applies to Catholicism — that Anglican bishop, where are your converts? Where are your children? And where are your priests? Who's producing adult baptisms, marriages and infant baptisms, and new priests? I think it would be very interesting to find out if these young priests that are mentioned in this article so much, these much more conservative young priests that we're seeing in seminaries and stuff, I think it'd be very interesting to find out what their family backgrounds are. How many of them come from families with only one or two children? Or are they coming from families that have three, four, five, even six children, in which the parents would welcome one of their children going into the priesthood or entering a convent? And that's something that I wrote about years ago because of a very important book I would recommend to listeners who really want to dig into this more. And the name of the priest who wrote the book — and this is a man of the Catholic left, by the way, a seminary educator from the Catholic left, Father Donald Cousins, who I think anyone would consider a progressive — and he wrote a book called The Changing Face of the Priesthood. He was one of the first people to really talk openly about what he called the national culture of gay life in seminaries and in many Catholic institutions, even though he was someone who was much more liberal than, say, the Catechism on issues of sexuality. But he stressed one thing over and over to me in the interviews I did with him on several occasions. He said, families with one or two children are not excited when their son, their only son, decides he wants to become a priest. But Catholics with more than two children, two, three, four, five, six children, they are much more likely to be just happy and pleased and blessed if one of their children feels a call into a vocation in the church. So we're back to those questions again. Where are the priests coming from? Where, if you're losing hundreds of thousands of Catholics, where are the new Catholics coming from? Whether those are infants or converts, what churches fit that? And at the same time as this AP story, I thought it was interesting. Religion News Service is wrestling with the fact that the historic Catholic city of Baltimore is about to have to close many, many of its churches, especially in the city of Baltimore itself. And this story, at no point — it makes it a matter of ethnicity and race, quite — Black churches are being closed. Are they not? And it never really asks. Yes, they're closing it based on attendance. Okay, but what about other signs of life in these churches? You know they're not closing churches that are growing with converts, children, and new priests. You know they're not closing those churches. So what churches are being closed and why? I think Catholics deserve coverage that asks those questions. And I think those are, I've suggested all kinds of questions here today that journalists need to be putting into these stories, or at least filling it out more than the AP story did.
So with just a minute here, is America out of step with global Catholic trends?
Yeah, there's a crucial moment in the AP story where these conservatives that are reshaping parishes across the country, quote, leaving them sometimes at odds with Pope Francis and much of the Catholic world. Yes, they are definitely at odds with Pope Francis on many issues, but much of the Catholic world, Pope Francis represents the church in Argentina, which is in rapid decline, even though it's a global South church. And he really, most of the strongest supporters of Pope Francis are in Europe. And the leaders of the Synod on Synodality, most of them are from Europe. And there is no part of the world in which Catholicism is shrinking faster than Europe. Italy, even. But where is Catholicism growing? It's growing in the more conservative, even if that's not Latin masses, in the more conservative parts of the church in Asia, Africa, and some other parts of Central America, much as we've seen with the wars in Methodism, Anglicanism, etc. So are the conservative Catholics in America out of step with the Catholic world or with parts of the Catholic world that are in decline, but they may be closer in doctrinal approach to the more conservative parts of the Catholic world that, like them, are growing? And that's a weird sentence in the AP story, and I think it should have been unpacked.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow on Communications and Culture at St. Constantine College in Houston, Texas. He writes Rational Sheep, a Substack newsletter for faith and mass media. He's author of the National On Religion column for the Andrews McMeel Universal Syndicate, and for two decades he led the GetReligion.org website. Terry, thank you very much.
Glad to be here.
We'll be going through your email and the Issues Etc. comment line on this Wednesday, May the 8th, when we come back. Our email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, and the Issues Etc. listener comment line, 618-223-8382. What is truth? Where did it come from? What is a human being? How do we know right and wrong? What is beauty? What happens when we die? You'll find answers to these questions in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May, Prepared with a Reason. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or learn more about Prepared with a Reason at issuesetc.org. Equipping Christian high schoolers, young adults, and adults to defend the Christian faith. Prepared with a Reason.
At the heart of Lutherans for Life is good news. Good news that brings hope to a culture so focused on death. Lutherans for Life equips Lutherans and their neighbors to be gospel-motivated voices for life. Lutherans for Life believes God gives the gift of life to all people, from the moment of conception until natural death. Learn more about how you and your congregation can help bring hope and healing to life issues at LutheransForLife.org.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Have you ever wished you could see Ad Crucem's products before buying them? Well, you can. Come visit us at our workshop in Littleton, Colorado, and watch how we make our Christmas ornaments, print our icons, see our church banners, greeting cards, posters, and jewelry. We'll also be on the road this summer, exhibiting at LCC's Christian Culture Conference and Buggenhagen. If you're there too, be sure to pop in and say hi, or visit us online at adcrucem.com.